Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you'll meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sabine, for coming on to the podcast. We really appreciate you taking the time to kind of come on and, you know, talk to us a little bit about what you do. I know that, you know, at Label Sessions, we know you as someone who is kind of a trends and futures researcher, but also, you know, an innovation strategist and someone who facilitates, you know, transformation and innovation within companies, within entities and stuff like that, with a focus on regenerative futures. Is that right? I mean, perhaps it'll be easier if I kind of hand over the mic to you and if you could possibly, you know, introduce your work and your backstory that gets you used to know to where you are now.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be here. First of all, thank you for having me. And so I'm Sabine Koppe. I'm based in Berlin, but I work internationally. And maybe where do I start? My work with Other Ways Emergent Futures, it centers, as you mentioned a little bit, around, on the one side, exploring what is emerging, where and why, but also what conditions are needed so that living and regenerative systems and desirable futures can emerge. And how you best create those conditions. And that is for ecosystems like organizations, but also societies and cultures in general. And I do that by, I use research, I use facilitation, experimentation, and capability building, which is for me really important because I think in this time of transition, we really need to learn and unlearn a lot of things. And this is also one of my fields of work.
And how did you what is it about the challenge that drives you to do it? What was your almost kind of your backstory, your superhero backstory behind where you got to
the superhero backstory? Yeah, I think when I was, when I hear this question, I really have to think about my childhood and this bounteous curiosity and this exploration about the world. And I always used to, already as a child, question the status quo and look at ways how I can improve things and how things might be innovated. And I have worked since the age of 13 and a lot of different jobs all around the world and in very different environments, and observing how things were and seeing that also already in my business studies, I felt that a lot of ways just felt so wrong. The way business worked, very extractive, it felt so outdated. And I always had this feeling of there's opportunity and there's, you know, need to change. And I was always working in those kind of fields. So I was coming from research and market research and tourism research. And then it transformed basically to, I just don't want to look at what is past, but I want to know what is emerging and what is new. And then I turned to trend and futures research. And at that time, innovation was really, was a thing that companies were not really, you know, they were not really able to do it within their companies and organizations, and they needed a lot of support from outside. So yeah, I was doing that and am doing that. And since 2012, I'm self-employed. And it transformed more into organizational development and business strategy and supporting on companies and really understand what do we need to focus on? What do we need to prioritize? What do we need to let go of? And where are the ways where we can really focus our attention and investments for the future?
Do you think that with I know that lots of companies have always enjoyed kind of innovation and pushing that part. Do you think that, you know, you focus on the regenerative futures part within these? Do you think that it's easier nowadays to start that conversation than it was before? Or have you always worked with people who have been interested in that, specifically that regenerative part of the future?
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, I feel people are, and organizations are a lot more open. I have worked with them and I always emphasized this topic of, let's say, sustainability. But most of the time, the reaction was like, okay, yeah, it's nice, but, you know, and then it transformed a little bit. And then there was also a lot of regulations that pressed companies to needing to act accordingly and do something like that. But it still was seen as something that is something that they don't feel is a contribution and a value that they needed to, you know, like from within, you know, do something and give something back. And I feel like now it really landed in people that everyone is like plays a part in this, and that we have so much we can, especially collectively, we can, you know, do so much. And if everyone does their part, as so much as possible. And I think this conversation we are really, I'm having with a lot of people right now. And the great thing is that there is so much already there that you don't have to like change the world, you know. It's mostly a change of mindset first. And then the rest is really like is transformative, and it helps companies really to understand, for example, to integrate circular processes that they can actually save money, you know? I mean, that's in the end already a good argument, you know, because you save money because you use everything and you don't produce garbage, and you know, like you integrate everything that you produce and see how you can use it with other parts. And it's done already in a lot of industries. That's also something that I observe in my different projects that I do.
Thinking about you as a leader and what you do, you know, when you're taking on a new challenge, or you're working with a new company, or trying to change something in society, I wonder, you know, the starting point of that. What is always like, what I was trying to find out, what makes you tick? So kind of like, do you have specific processes you go to when you're starting? Is there a clear starting point for you whenever you take on a new challenge?
Also, that is a good question. I mean, I'm always quite intuitive about what is coming my way and go in resonance with it. And I also try to see what is really needed in that situation, to not just fall into, in German we say 0815, which is like the known process that I always do, also because I get easily bored. But I would say if I look back, and I mean, of course, I can also draw from years of working in diverse environments and projects. But the thing is, when I take on a new challenge, I feel it's a mix of exploring, observing, asking a lot of questions, and talking to people that have different perspectives on the topic, on a challenge. And then testing my hypotheses of how to go about, and how, for example, also to design a process with methods that I know, or also experimenting with new tools and hybrid adaptations. And also what I do is this kind of mixture of, I call it planning with Slack, which means I build somehow an agenda, you know, like what I think, but then I'm always flexible and ready to improvise and adapt according to what is needed in the moment. And that I think it is this kind of not being rigidly like stuck in some process and something that we planned out, but, you know, like go and see and adapt and go another step forward. And that's basically, maybe you could say that that's the way I do things, my default mode.
It keeps life, a bit exciting and, you know, it's slightly less stressful, I think, if, you know, it means that if someone throws something at you that you're not expecting, you're not, oh, it's not part of the process.
And I also feel for myself and also for the, it does good to the process and to people, but also to myself, you know, before I was very, like a few years ago, still I was very like this planner and controller that always wanted to map out everything and then like go and then got really like sometimes frustrated if things didn't work out, and to now see this not working out as a source of information for, okay, obviously this is not working. Let's think about how we could do it differently. And maybe something else is needed right now. So, and that makes it much more easy and also joyful to be saying to work in those situations. Also, you cannot plan. There's always something unexpected happening, something that you don't know, people that get sick or whatever, you know. And so it's always good to, yes, to be kind of like flexible and adaptive and go iteratively about the project and the work.
I guess you've been doing this, and like you said, your process is kind of, or your way of thinking about process has changed a little bit. I guess if we were like almost to look back and think about kind of your younger self, perhaps kind of the Sabina that was starting this whole journey, is there any advice that you would like to give her about, you know, maybe perhaps in, you know, convincing people to start thinking about the future in a regenerative way, or, you know, anything? I don't know. Maybe I'll just open up the question a little. What would you tell your younger self?
Well, first of all, just in general, I would say, don't worry so much about what others are thinking and saying, what is right or wrong. You know, really trust and follow your gut. And don't limit yourself, because I don't know, it's, you know, like when you start yourself with believing in some hypothesis that you didn't even try it, it's just very, very limiting and very restraining. And I think this is never good, especially when you turn towards futures and possibility. Another thing which doesn't really have to do with processes, but maybe also more in that way of like trusting the unfolding, you know, the unfolding of things, and that sometimes when things seem to go wrong or not turn out the way you want it, that this is a good thing, because as one door closes, another one opens. And when something ends, there's always also a new beginning. And this is something that makes me now in that stage that I'm in much more relaxing, be it in my work or in my private life. And then one thing that is really important, stand your woman and set boundaries. You know, my younger self was really like more like timid, and especially when it comes to misogynist and abusive behavior, you know, don't eat it, you know, say stop and make your point. That's important also, not for only for yourself, but also for the ones that come after you.
No, exactly. And I think the stuff that you were saying about kind of not being too hard on yourself, seeing, you know, if something unexpected is coming your way, not to beat yourself up about it. I feel like that's such an important trait when working with the future and sort of the unknown of what is to come. I feel like a lot of business is all about, you know, making sure that, you know, processes are in place, but it's very kind of rigid. But the whole, okay, but you need to have a little bit of flexibility about what the future, you know, what could come. We can like risk manage, we can't 100% predict it and 100%, you know, expect, oh, you know, yeah, we don't know for certain what's coming. And I feel like the way that you said that you carry it within yourself is reflective of that.
Yeah, it is. And this is what is really important to me. And what I mentioned before with other ways, emergent futures, that was born because I understood we can, like, when working towards desirable futures, we cannot, in this complexity and uncertainty and volatility of things and the everything happening all at once, we cannot it's audacious to think we can control everything. So the best way to do it is to prepare the soil and know the fertilizer and look at the conditions and, you know, don't stand in the way of the good conditions and help to make it happen the best as you can. But you will never know exactly if the intended result will be reached 100%. And sometimes it's also not a good thing, you know, it's just not a good thing that this 100% result is reached because maybe something else is better along the way. So this is how I love to work and look at also like how to work with futures and towards, you know, desirable futures. Yeah.
And I guess kind of thinking about your industry and where you work, I guess kind of what questions do you think that kind of leaders should be asking themselves right now? What are the kind of shifts that it would be good for them to respond to? It's almost like your message to the outside world.
Yeah. Well, first of all, beautiful, because I love great questions. I think they are transformative in themselves. So I think the questions that I think leaders should be asking themselves is one, what ancestor do I want to be and what legacy do I want to leave behind? What is it that really, really, really matters? How do I respond when I really accept the reality and urgency of collapse and crisis? What can I learn and do better? And last but not least, how can I serve in a meaningful way? And there's so much that I observe that is like shifting in our ways of being and doing. And maybe to say some words about that, like from my observation and also from my heart belief and also from my place of hope, I believe we are moving from a transactional to a relational economy. This is a big shift, and that means it's a different way of being and doing. We are moving from extraction to regeneration, and we're also moving from performing to serving, from consumption, also like from us being or seeing ourselves as consumers to co-creators, to understand that we have agency. Also from an individual hero's journey to this kind of collective wisdom and doing, like an organism. Also, what I think is important for organizations, from competing to understanding that we share. We need to be sharing as people, but also as organizations. There's no different way. And also this thought from ownership to custody and guardianship. And I think this is also important for businesses, you know, not only that we live in a sharing economy, but really this understanding that the idea of owning something, you know, on this planet it is just crazy. We are just here for some time and then... And then we share, and as we move along, somebody else is there and takes care of place and people and what is there.
I think I really like that. And when people talk about future, you know, it's almost like they're starting to really look, you know, really into the future. Before, it's kind of, you know, medium to long term about, you know, what's the next, I don't know, like 5-10 years of this company. But now it's like, okay, when you're talking about, okay, what legacy do you want to leave behind? It's like, what do you want to leave behind after you're gone, whether you're retired or, you know, how do you want to change society that, you know, for the future generations, not just the next one, but the one after that and the one after that, how do you want them to live, that kind of thing?
Yeah. And I think this perspective change also for me, it was transformational, this deep time approach. You know, when you look at also, you know, just the span, what is our time here on Earth, like individually, but also as humanity, and how we are part in this kind of time scheme and time frame, that we're just this like tiny blip, but we have this impact and we see this curve that shows that in the past 40 or 70 years, we have had such a tremendous impact on our environment, and detrimental and destructive. And the idea how beautiful it can be to tend to it and to tend to its aliveness and diversity instead of monocultures, and, you know, this is, I mean, to me, this is beautiful and motivating to, you know, to think in those perspectives, you know, like.
And is there anything that you're seeing, you know, starting when you're having conversations with others and, you know, you're doing your research, is there anything that's getting you excited at the moment? You know, are there new opportunities or, you know, or on the other hand, you know, new challenges as well that are emerging that, you know, you're thinking that, you know, people should be looking out for, that you think it will be important?
Yes, definitely. I mean, there is at the moment a lot of possibility that I see, but there's also a lot of risk. I mean, we are on this world's edge, let's say. And generally in those, let's say, destabilizing phases in ecosystems, like the one we are currently in, there's always a big discomfort. It's uncomfortable because so many things are ending, you know, and people get scared and they try to hold on to things and they resist. But I see there's so much potential in and around us. And to, you know, from this kind of, like here in Germany, we're the masters of complaining and of like resisting and like, oh, everything, you know, it used to be better in the past. It wasn't better. It's better now, but change is always like kind of, it's uncomfortable, but there is the possibility and the understanding, also knowing that we don't have to solve everything. We as humanity don't have to solve it. I mean, it's arrogant to think that we have the solutions in our hands, but it's also a relief to know that we don't have to do everything, and also not only one of us, but we are many. And if we do stop certain things and do less and do different, and also if we remember and we stop distracting ourselves and we focus on our attention on what really matters, we can really, you know, we can shift to better. And this is something that I see also, this wealth of knowledge and tools that we have. Everything is already there. I mean, it's amazing to see the breakthroughs that we have in science right now. You know, there's so much that is happening, you know, and you're like, wow, amazing what we know now and what we can do with those technologies that we have. But technology, like in big tech and technology, is not always the first answer. It's not always the first answer, and it shouldn't be. And I think if we go to, as Tyson Yunker Porter calls it, tech, T-E-K, traditional ecology knowledge, or traditional ecological knowledge, this is something that we just have to rediscover. It is there, and it comes with a sense of accountability and limits, and with an economy of scale, but scaling at a pace and place that is incorporates accountability, and not just like like we think of scaling up in the startup environment, you know, like go fast, go first, you know, like at all costs, with no accountability to place and people that are affected by your distribution chain and your production chains.
And I think this reinvention of almost like the way things are done is super important. And it's, I think it's important for us as a society to reflect, you know, which direction we want to go in. Because I feel like it could just go, tech is the way forwards, you know, it's going to control everything. But you do find there are a lot of people pushing back saying, you know, tech is going to be assisting us. And that's the way it should be. We should be kind of like the humans, the us first, the decisions, the human ways of thinking and how we connect with nature first. And then tech is just a way to, you know, make that more efficient or make that, you know, a helping hand along the way. And I think it'll be interesting to see where it goes, which one, which side.
Yeah. And I mean, it is, I love if we incorporate more critical and diverse thinking in the first place, you know, if we go into causal layered analysis, you know, a technique that we use in the futures work, there is so much that you can, you know, like before you implement and like throw a technology into the wide open and let it go rogue, you know, and it doesn't mean like, oh, I don't do and I don't experiment and try and see how it works, but I have to understand what are the possible implications of this and then act with a, let's say, with a moral, and a value-based approach to this, you know. And if I don't ask the question and just run, it's, I mean, the potential risk, as we saw with different technologies in history throughout today, you know, the intentions were always good, but then something bad happened. So we should also decide, like, how, when, how, where, and who uses what technology, you know. And I'm not opposed to using tech, absolutely not. I love it. I love how it makes our lives, how this conversation is possible, you know, beyond place and space and time somehow, sometimes or even. But doing that with a critical thinking mind is really, really essential and important.
And I think throughout this whole conversation, it's been really evident that it's almost pointing out business as usual. You do what you're normally doing, but just almost be mindful of the effects and mindful of, you know, the stuff that not only that you think is going to impact, but then almost one layer after that, you know, who is it going to impact in the future? What's the, you know, unintended consequences? We should be thinking about that as well, and just being, you know, mindful of all the emergent futures that could come way before we're, you know, way after we're gone.
Yeah. And integrate the people that are affected and potentially affected by this, integrate them early on in the conversation. This is always some part that makes me mad, because companies skip that in a way because they want to move fast and they want to be efficient, but they don't talk to people that are affected or that are you know that are impacted by also potential outcomes, you know. And we have to just do the work to integrate those people, and also not think from our, in my world, mostly Western white privileged bias, you know. Open up the conversation, integrate also different disciplines. The most interesting things are happening when, for example, art and philosophy and science meet, and the conversations they are having about one topic is so interesting, you know. And when they start to experimenting together, what scientists learn, like quantum computing scientists learn from working with artists that uses different processes and explores quantum technology in her art is so amazing. You know, why it's like a reciprocal kind of iterative learning process, you know, and I really encourage also that. I find it very important and also exciting.
Absolutely wonderful. And, you know, I guess with that, all of these different things and all of that talking about what could happen in the future, we could go on for absolute ages. But maybe we'll leave it there for a nice teaser, an insight, an introduction to. And, you know, people can reach out if they want to hear more and, you know, deep dive into their, you know, what interests them or their specific problems that perhaps they're seeing within their organization. Yeah, I guess just thank you so, so much, Sabina, for coming on, giving us the introduction to, you know, a topic that I'm sure a lot of people think about but aren't really integrating into perhaps business strategy. It's just kind of like an add-on, but you're saying, you know, it should be super important, and perhaps this opens up the conversation for them and their team and the organization. So thank you. We do have one last question. Before you go, it's a question that, you know, we ask everyone who joins us on the podcast. It's a bit of an odd one, but I think it gives an insight into, you know, who you are and a little bit more about you, not just your expertise. I'll ask the question. So, Sabina, on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you and why?
It's not an odd question. It's actually an interesting one. It's a varied answer, as you get always from me. I would say in the emerging world that I see cracking through everywhere, I'm a 2. In the still dominant world that we're living in, I am a 9.5. I think this, I would say, why is that so? Because work with the resonance principle and with embodied intelligence, and this is not common in the business world. And when I introduce that in a process working with a person, it can bring up interesting things in people, and they find it, they perceive it as unusual. Or maybe weird because they're not used to it. But it's actually bringing new perspectives in. So for me, it's very normal. But for other people, it's maybe not so normal.
So maybe it starts off at 9.5, but as time goes on, you know, 8, 7.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again so, so much for joining us on the podcast. It's been lovely talking to you. And yeah, hopefully we're going to have more conversations as people are reaching out and talking more about, okay, what can we do about, you know, the future of our work and how to make it more regenerative and, you know, beneficial for society. So thank you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.